Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. In 1942, Inga Auerbacher and her parents were deported from their tiny village in southwestern Germany, where Jews and Christians had lived side by side for generations. Their destination was Terezin, a Nazi concentration camp in Czechoslovakia. Inga was one of 15,000 children imprisoned there. She's also part of the meager 1% who survived to tell about it. A retired chemist and author of I Am a Star, Child of the Holocaust, she travels the world sharing her story. Inga Auerbacher, thanks so much for joining us.
It's an honor to be with you today.
Like all stories, yours has a beginning, middle, and an end. And I'd like to start by talking about your life before the Holocaust.
Sure. I was born in a little village in southwestern Germany called Kippenheim, very near the French-Swiss border. A village of about 2,000 people, 60 Jewish families, and I'm the last Jewish child to be born there. And we were a wonderful community. Yes, the Jewish community was a little bit isolated. We took care of ourselves, but it didn't mean that we had not good relations with the Christian neighbors. And there was no real hospital there. It was closed at that time. So I was born in my own house, in my parents' bedroom. And there was only one doctor, and he wasn't Jewish. And he already belonged to the Nazi party, to the SS, actually. But he still took very good care of his Jewish patients. Later on, he did some terrible things, probably the euthanasia program, killing people with mental and physical difficulty, and he was jailed for many, many years. But to me, he gave me life. I cannot say any bad things about him.
It wasn't until about 1938 that yes. you started to really feel anti-Semitism.
That's
Describe
true.
What that was like in the eyes of a child.
I spent a great deal of time also with my grandparents in an even smaller village. So I was partially in Kippenheim and partially in that village. And the first real feeling I had of Jewish hatred was November 9th and 10th, Kristallnacht, the first major riot against the Jewish people in modern times. And the riot took place in Germany and in Austria. I was not even 3 years old. Grandparents came to see us many times. We went there, they came to us. And Grandpa was very religious. I came from an Orthodox family, modern Orthodox. Grandpa went to the synagogue in the morning to say his morning prayers. It was November 10th in Kippenheim. It was a two-day riot. And he was taken from his prayers, wearing his prayer shawl, ripped from all of that, and sent to the Dachau concentration camp. Then the police came to our house and arrested my father and sent him also to Dachau. All boys and men from the age of 16 on were sent to concentration camps on November 9th and 10th. By us, it was Dachau.
And in fact, your
places,
grandfather,
it was Buchenwald.
Your grandfather and father were actually released from Dachau, which is amazing.
But what is even more strange, my father fought in World War I. And he was wounded badly in his shoulder.
A decorated soldier.
Yes, he had the Iron Cross. And when he reached Dachau, they said, you can throw everything away. It doesn't mean anything. You can throw your cross away. They were treated very badly. Had to give up their clothing, wear the blue and white striped pajamas, no underwear, stand at attention for hours in the bitter cold. And if somebody even wanted to blow the nose, they were hosed down with ice-cold water. And back at home, the riot was absolutely terrible. All the Jewish houses and businesses were attacked. All the windows were broken. I was standing with my grandmother and mother in the living room, glass all over the place. And one of the hoodlums looked through the broken window and he said, oh, the chandelier is still hanging. And he threw a big rock through the window. My mother just pulled me away. And then we were hiding in the backyard shed until the riot was over.
Your father believed all of this would blow over.
Yes.
While some of your family members actually emigrated to Brazil, your father had such faith and such love for Germany.
Absolutely.
That he thought this would blow over and you would be okay. That all changed in 1939.
Absolutely. In 1938.
His shop, his business was taken from
everything.
Him.
Everything. We lost our citizenship. I might have been a citizen maybe 9 months of my life when we became stateless. And well, somehow they were allowed to come home again, my father and my grandfather. My mother bought some bogus tickets to some South American country. It was really nothing. And she somehow got my father out and my grandfather out. It's out of Dachau. And then, of course, it was quite clear we have to leave. We just were too late to try to get out.
By then, other countries were not accepting
Jews. Nothing. And we probably had a number to come to America. My mother's brother already had gotten into America, to New York. And it might have taken 10 years, the number we had. Brazil was closing up everything, but we still tried. We sold our house at a very cheap price and moved in with my grandparents, hoping with all our hearts to get out. My grandfather didn't want to go. He said, I'm born here, I want to die here.
And he did.
And he did, yes, he did.
You have with you the actual yellow star that you were forced to sew on your jacket in 1941. You were you're 6 years old?
I'm 6 years old. Anybody from the age of six on had to wear the yellow star, which came on a yellow sheet, like a cloth, very poor cloth. You had to pay for them. We had to pay for the damage to Kristallnacht, and we had to pay for the trip to the camp. In Germany, there was a film made, Theresienstadt, one-way tickets. One-way ticket. Don't go back home. And you still see the thread on it that I ripped off the star on May 8, 1945, when I was deported, and everybody had to wear this star.
Your father told you, because this long bus ride you were taking to the Jewish school that you were forced to go to at
train.
Six, train.
Train ride,
here
yeah.
Here you are by yourself at six.
Right.
And your father told you.
Sit on the left side that you can naturally cover up your star. But there was one hero, a German woman, a Christian woman, who came up and saw this little girl. She didn't want to be just a bystander. So this is the whole thing about bystanders. Elie Wiesel says they are equally guilty. But this woman had a soul, a heart. When she walked out of the train, she put a little bag of rolls next to me. That was my number one hero. And I have another one even bigger than that. My grandmother had a maid who was also her friend for more than 20 years.
Teresa.
She came in the middle of the night to save two photo albums and our set of prayer books, which was very important to us. And when we came back, we said, we want to go to Teresa. They said, she is no longer alive. When the Americans came through that area, they knocked on the door. They thought everybody had ammunition. They would shoot out. And they shot through the door, killing her instantly. And I say, if there's a heaven, there are two women, one Christian and another Jewish, who are hand in hand.
Tell us a little bit about life in Terezin, where you and both of your parents were for 3 years.
Yes. They were actually, the first transports from Württemberg were in 41 to a place called Riga in Latvia. And we were in the transport. And my father wrote a letter to the Gestapo, the secret police, had pictures taken of his wounds. And somehow we got out, but not my beloved grandmother. Now, in the home state where I was born, The Jews were taken out in 1940 already to a place in the Pyrenees up in France, border of Spain and France, called the Basque region. So all the Jews in the state of Baden were taken out. So it was clear of Jews. Judenrein already in 1940, in October, they were taken there. So had we been there at that time, we would have been transported.
It's miraculous that you and both of your parents survived. When you write in three of your books that talk about this experience, 15,000 children, Jewish children, were imprisoned in Terezin concentration camp. And of that, perhaps about 100 survived.
Yeah, a little bit more. But also, if I can backtrack a little bit, if I may.
Please.
Because it's important. Our transport was very close to 1,200 people, and I was the youngest. I was 7 years old. And all the little towns would gather the people to make up this whole transport, and which took place in Stuttgart, the capital of Württemberg. But before that, they got the people into the places to take them from there. And ours, it was in Göppingen, a bigger city. And we had to assemble in the school gymnasium, open everything. We were, of course, we got a directive which stated so many things: you can't get out of the transport no matter how sick you are, no knives, no sharp implements, no forks, nothing, a bedroll. And I remember one of the guards, we had to open everything on the table, he saw I had a little Dutch boy pin. And he ripped it off me. He yelled in the Swabian dialect, "Du brauchst das nicht, wo du hingehst," meaning you won't need this where you're going to. I'm a little girl, 7 years old, and I had my doll in my arm. I was not going to part with my doll, because that was a memory of my grandmother, who knew where she was.
How did you manage to hang on to that precious doll?
And well, he ripped her from me, too. He looked inside her hollow body to see if I was carrying anything. And I wasn't. I kind of fought for my doll back, and he gave her back to me. And that's how I arrived in Terezin. We were on the train for at least 2 days. It was still a passenger train, very crowded. You couldn't get out. And we arrived in a little town called Bauschwitz and told to drop everything except your bedroll, a little knapsack, metal dishes, and I'm carrying my doll for dear life. And marched into the camp. We had many old people. I definitely was the youngest in that transport, 7 years old. And we arrived in Terezin, or Theresienstadt, which was actually a fortress town built around 1780 by Emperor Joseph II in memory of his mother Maria Theresia. It was like an army garrison built with red brick walls, barbed wire, and wooden fences. And it was a place where the intelligentsia of Europe was sent, the highly decorated war veterans, the famous doctors, lawyers, artists. They put them in one place, perhaps to show the world they're all in one place and nothing is going to happen. But every single person there had a death sentence on their head. Every single person.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guest is Inga Auerbacher, a child survivor of the Holocaust. In May 1946, 1 year after the liberation of the Terezin concentration camp in Czechoslovakia, she and her parents immigrated to the United States. She has documented her miraculous story of survival and hope in several autobiographies, including I Am a Star, Child of the Holocaust. You write about the International Red Cross coming to Terezin, where you and both of your parents were for 3 years.
Yes.
And the farce that was created.
Absolutely.
To allow them to leave thinking that things were entirely different than reality.
Terezin was like a place you put cattle, you keep them a while, and then you slaughter them. The next step was Auschwitz, and almost everybody was sent out after the International Red Cross inspection, which made a theatrical production of the whole place. They printed money, which you couldn't buy anything with it, to science, to school, to playground. None of these things really existed. Even a play was done. And they didn't show them the crematory. Now, we didn't have gas chambers there at that time. They were being built. They were not completed yet. Eichmann, who was in charge of the Jewish question, was there many times. I saw him. Whenever he came, another transport out. And especially after the International Red Cross inspection, almost the whole camp was sent to Auschwitz. Out of the 140,000 people between 1941 and 45, two-thirds would be shipped to the killing centers like Auschwitz. Close to a third died there, about 34,000 died there of malnutrition, disease. I mean, mice, rats, bed bugs, and fleas. Those were our constant companions. Of course,
and
hunger,
in fact,
too.
You contracted tuberculosis, yes, in the concentration camps. And you suffered from scarlet fever, from measles,
yes,
from mumps.
Yes.
How you survived is actually miraculous.
And you know that I actually prayed for this disease.
For TB.
Yes, because there was a girl in our compound. Most men, women, and children had to live separate, but they could still see each other. The disabled war veterans lived in a separate area, very crowded, just like everybody else. But
two to a bed, you had a bed at all.
Well, bunk beds, you know, many people in the room. And for 2 out of the 3 years, we shared a tiny room without a window with a family from Berlin. They had a daughter named Ruth. Father was also a war veteran and disabled. He had a limp.
And she was Christian.
And, well, the father was half Jewish, the mother totally. In the eyes of the Nazis, she was Jewish, but she was brought up as a devout Christian. And she was sent to Auschwitz. That was devastating for me. And she died in Auschwitz as a devout Christian because of her Jewish heritage. And around us, we had children, the children of these parents like mine. We would see one man had his leg missing or two missing or arm missing, a bullet wound in the head still draining. And one girl, we were told, don't go near her. She has a terrible disease, but she was getting a little bit more food, maybe an extra piece of bread. And of course we played with her. And I prayed to God at that time, I am so hungry. I need to get a little more food. Please, God, let me have what this girl had.
Tuberculosis. Which plagued you.
Yes, for many years.
In fact, when you finally were liberated, 1 year later, you and your family made it to the United States. In fact, you talk about that spring of 1945,
yes,
being reborn.
Yes, it is May 8th, 1945. May 8th is celebrated every year. Wherever I go, all the teachers know already, we celebrate a birthday of my liberation. This year, I will be in Texas. And where I've been going for 10 years, speaking, of course, in many schools all around the country and even Europe. And I just came back from Germany and spent the whole week over there.
What was it like? In fact, you've been back to Terezin. What was it like to see that place again?
The first time I went back was 1966. I wanted to retrace my life.
You were 31.
Yeah. And I didn't tell my parents that I was going to go there. I took a boat first to Israel, and instead of staying only 1 week, I spent a whole month there. I loved it so much. And then I made my way back to Europe through Italy and Austria. I got my visa to get into Czechoslovakia at that time. It was very difficult because the Russians were there. And I made my way back to the camp. And it looked almost the same as I left it. I found the house. People were living there again. It looked terrible. I've been back many times since then. Today it is being rebuilt. The whole town is being rebuilt. But it is a very sad town. And I remember it was raining the first day I went back, first time. And there were children running around. And I was devastated. I said, where are the children who were here?
You talk about Germany, and you say that there is almost no day that I am not reminded of the past.
Yeah.
some of that terrible past is triggered for you by hearing German voices.
Not that much anymore, but things like a fortress, like when I was in Quebec, or a fortress like towns with the walls, that triggers it. And sometimes, even when I was in Germany, you have this sound of the police cars and ambulances, this shattering sound, and here you are again.
Transported back.
Yes, you are.
I'd like to talk about forgiveness.
Right. Well, that's a very difficult problem. They have asked me for forgiveness. They have. I have many friends today in Germany, and I go every year, sometimes twice, to speak to the point of exhaustion from Berlin all the way down to Trier, the oldest city in Germany, which is the furthest south. Clergy have said, you come back, you forgive us. I said, no. I believe that the people who actually did the killing, the one who killed my grandmother,
shot dead in a forest.
Yeah, well, I went to see those places. It was just horrible, these mass graves. And for all intents and purposes, I should be in one of them. In Riga, the Birkenike Forest has, I think, 52 mass graves. Between 50,000 and 80,000 people are in there. It's a memorial now. All my friends are there, my grandmother, etc. And I don't think everybody was involved in this, but most were. I believe in reconciliation, especially with the young people, and I speak to thousands over there. My German is still good. And forgiveness of this, no. Of the actual people who did it, no. In the Jewish faith, if it is premeditated murder, then only the person who was killed can forgive. Of course, it's a personal thing. But I don't have to be a hater. I have reconciled my life for this, especially with the younger people.
How do you kind of relive it without being overwhelmed by it?
You know, I've done it now many times. Yes, it comes back. But I just feel it is a mission for me, to the point of exhaustion, to share. And especially in Germany, I speak their dialect, and the kids look at me.
And they're amazed.
They're amazed. She's like us. Yes. I was brought up in a German home. We spoke German at home. We ate German food. I mean, what I wanted for my birthday was Sauerbraten. And they realized, well, she's just like us. And I make sure that they know what is it to be Jewish. It is not a race, because Hitler said we're a race. My mother was blonde and gray eyes. Her family were all blue eyes and blonde hair. You have Indian Jews, you have Chinese Jews, black Jews. Michelle Obama has a cousin who's a rabbi in Chicago. And you can see him on YouTube praying, just like myself. Orthodox too.
Your story is remarkable for a number of reasons, not just because you and both of your parents survived, but because there seems to be a division of Holocaust survivors, those who cannot talk about it, not even among their family members. And then there are people like you who feel that it's a moral imperative to talk about it.
Well, it wasn't always like that. I wanted to forget everything. Nobody knew in my high school, and by the way, I lost 8 years of schooling. I never finished my first grade.
Because of tuberculosis?
No, not only that. I had to, when I started the first grade, I had to go to a Jewish school and travel very far with a train. I did that by myself as a six-year-old. Then school stopped after 6 months, but I could read, write, and do a little math already. But when we came to America, I was in the hospital. There was very little schooling. I was in bed for 2 years, total bed rest. There was no other cure. And that didn't cure me. And finally, my parents took me home. They said, it's enough already. I was even sicker right afterwards. And then this new drug came to be
streptomycin,
which saved my life at that time. But it wasn't the entire answer either. But at 15, I started my real school career.
And yet you spent 38 years as a chemist and a researcher.
I went to college after that, and I got sick again. And by that time, I had to leave again another year. I finished high school in 3 instead of 4 years. I didn't want to be the oldest one. Then new drugs came out. I had to take 26 pills a day plus 2 shots of streptomycin. And, of course, I got cured, thank God.
And you had ambitions to become a medical doctor.
Well, yes, at that point I wanted to become a doctor. I wanted to become a real American without
an accent. You wanted to shed your German accent?
Yes, absolutely. I worked hard, and maybe still there are little traces. But because when you're 11, when you come to this country, you could still have the possibility of losing it. You know, you have to work at it. Now when I meet my former high school schoolmates or college, nobody knew my background, nobody. I always knew that I wanted to write a book about it. And in 81, there was a first world gathering of Jewish Holocaust survivors in Jerusalem. And I wrote a poem. I write, obviously, because I couldn't do anything else, I wrote poems and stories.
Because you were sick in bed.
Exactly, what can you do, you know? And I found somebody in the hospital. Operating room was on my floor, and she was talking how she's doing cabaret things and singing. And I said, oh, do you compose? Of course. I said, I have a poem I'd like you to look at. And that became the only original song sung at that meeting. It was called We Shall Never Forget. And the woman was Rosalie Comintucci, and she married Ann O'Hara.
Speaking of We Shall Never Forget, and with just a little bit of time remaining, how concerned are you with the dwindling numbers of Holocaust survivors that we could forget?
Well, people can read it in books. There are many films, but of course you have the Holocaust deniers today. Who can say, well, the books, they're telling stories, it may not be true. The movies, it's Hollywood. And as long as the survivors are still alive, you can touch them, you can ask them questions, and it makes it much more real. Yes, the time will come that there will be none left. Spielberg did a very marvelous job in the interviews that he permitted to be done, many, many thousands. I did one too. And perhaps that will help, you know, because you hear it from the actual person.
Firsthand. Have you come any closer in these 69 years of kind of figuring out how so many seemingly good and decent people could become so evil?
You know, that is a puzzle to me today. I go there. The people are very nice. Yes, you have some right-wingers coming up again, but you have them here too. And I hate to see it over there. I never saw it. Maybe they kept it from me, but I have not had a bad experience, not yet. And it is also this new generation, they can't believe, how could it be that this barbaric nature, super barbaric, how they could become like that? And then you start to think, do we have a Jekyll and Hyde in all of us?
Inga Auerbacher, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much, too.
That was Inga Auerbacher. She's been lecturing on the Holocaust since 1981. She's the author of several books, including I Am a Star, Child of the Holocaust, and Beyond the Yellow Star to America. For more information, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.